Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Heidi Stirrup, appointed to a three-year term, the Board of Visitors to the U.S. Air Force Academy. The date, December 2020. The end of the Trump administration. The Biden administration, within moments, canceled that term. And ever since, there have been questions about that decision and the authority of the administration to cancel a term. This has been taken to the Defense Department. It's been taken to the White House. And now it's in front of the courts. And helping me is Professor Richard Epstein, who's very much involved in this matter, writing most recently at the Wall Street Journal, "The Military Academies and a Biden Power Grab," goes the headline. Trump may do the same thing if the Supreme Court doesn't intervene. Professor, a very good evening to you. You are a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teach law at NYU and the University of Chicago. And in your spare time, you puzzle through this fate of Heidi Stirrup. What is the Board of Visitors to the U.S. Air Force Academy? Good evening to you.
Yeah. Well, there is in the United States something which is loosely a fifth branch of government. Generally, it works pretty well, so nobody pays any attention to it. The first three branches are the president, the executive branch, the legislature, and the judiciary. Then there's this mysterious administrative state that has a lot of power delegated to you. But starting in the 1950s and then regulated very explicitly by the Federal Advisory Committee Act, what the government does in 50 or 60 different areas is it creates independent committees. The appointments are made some by the president on rotation. Every appointment is for 3 years and you get two a year. Some are made by the Speaker of the House and some are made by the head of the House of Representatives, right? Rather, the head of the Senate. And for years, what happens is these things get appointed. There's an orderly rotation that starts to take place. And so the new president, when he comes in the first year, he gets to replace two of the old guys. And then by the time he's 3 years in there, they're all his people. The other things turn over annually because of the change in the leadership in the House and Senate. Now, this was all true with except to one president, and that president was Joseph Biden. And what he did is, first he said, I'm suspending the operation of these committees because I have a zero-based review. That was done by Lloyd Austin. He was nuts when he did it. There was no authority to allow him to do it. And then he announced that, well, I could appoint subcommittees whose members are not members of the committee, thereby circumventing its power. And then in September of 2021, he just outright wrote everybody a dear John letter saying, if you don't resign by 5 o'clock this afternoon, I'm firing you by 6 o'clock. And so this is a complete departure from practice. Donald Trump had never done anything like that with any of the Biden appointees. And I wrote a little piece on the Hoover site saying this is just flatly unconstitutional. There were two lawyers, Mike Rose and Jeff McCabe, at it. And they were working on this case, and they said, could you help us? And so I said, I'll take double your salary, and we all did this pro bono, because it's extremely important to stop these kinds of abuses. And it's very tediously litigating against the government to say, and there was, to put it mildly, an utterly atrocious opinion in the district court, which essentially said we didn't have standing in the sense that, oh, you could be reappointed to the position, but once you're reappointed, you could be fired again. So it's not very much help. And then they looked at the substance of this, and Trump does not have, Trump nor Biden has the power to fire these people. They're term appointments. They're not part of the executive branch. So they're not subject to his control. And in fact, the only way these things work is because they have no power, which allows you to put them on in this particular form. So what Biden did is he fired them anyhow, and we brought suit to stop this. And it takes a very long time. And then what happened is the district court judge held the case over. And so by the time he decided, Heidi Stirrup's term was over. And so then the question is, what do? You can't get her back into office. So we insisted that this is a problem capable of evading review for which you need correction. And we basically said, what you have to do is look at the issues Everything is here a matter of law. There's no disputed facts. And you fashion a remedy to prevent the abuse by stating in very explicit words that these boards cannot be tampered with by the president once the appointments are made. And I think it's the right position. And we relied on an election case and on Roe v. Wade to show how it was that you could stop abuses from taking place even after the individual who was originally abused is no longer there. We go to the Court of Appeals. And to put it mildly, I am met with a certain degree of hostility during oral argument. The questions were exclusive to me, and all the questions seemed to say, this case is completely moot. We don't want to hear anything further. Then the government lawyer gets up, and he asks the panel, do you have any questions for me? They said no, and he sits down, and I'm back arguing again with the court. They wrote their opinion recently, and what it did is it made this mootness argument. And what you have to understand about it is if this mootness argument holds, and we will take the case to the Supreme Court, it means that every president can fire everybody else. And so the entire position of rotation in office, which is one of the democratic safeguards of sound government, will no longer be the case. And so it's been widely suggested that if Donald Trump wins in November, he should fire all the Biden appointees that he can in 2025. I would bring a suit against him to stop that. And so what's really going on here is all of this procedural stuff is being used to prevent a really straight shot at an extremely important legal question. And it's vital to the preservation of democratic institutions that no single president be allowed to wreck the thing by a unilateral decree, which has no basis in law or in fact. And I wrote this little piece in the Wall Street Journal trying to set it out. And I would urge readers who want to figure out what's going on, or listeners who want to figure out what's going on, to take a look at it. It's very short, but it's also very pointed.
Professor, we're going to move to something that looks more consistently positive to report. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of Starbucks in a challenge against a labor ruling by a federal judge, making it more difficult for a key federal agency to intervene when a company is accused of illegally suppressing labor organizing. This is New York Times' Noam Scheiber and Central Nurker reporting. This is the NLRB, and the Supreme Court's opinion is 9-0 in favor of Starbucks. Are you surprised, Richard?
Well, you're always a little surprised, but let's just do a little bit of background. The essential proposition of the Biden administration when it comes to labor relations is I am the most pro-union president who has ever been. And what he does is he takes certain liberties with the law when he thinks, in fact, that he could get away with it. And the NLRB under his leadership, which is now very heavily contested, what they do is they give very aggressive orders. And so say, we're going to adjoin you. It turns out there's a case called Winters, which is a very well-known case having to do with trying to enjoin activities associated with environmental protection that lists a series of factors that you have to show in order to satisfy this about the nature of the harm in question and the alternative remedies that are available and the public interest and so forth. And it turned out that the secretary didn't follow any of these. And the Department of Labor didn't follow those, and the district court regarded them. And the Supreme Court basically said, you can't play fast and loose. You cannot create a separate set of rules for labor that differs from the set of rules dealing with preliminary injunctions everywhere else. I'm not surprised in the sense the decision is obviously correct. And there have been several other decisions where the court has unanimously slapped down very aggressive interpretation, either by states or by the federal government, on labor matters. It's a little surprising that it's unanimous, but it's also extremely reassuring if you could get an opinion written by Justice Thomas that has Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson coming in there and signing it. She adds a concurrence. That's no big deal one way or another. But I think what is really happening at this particular point is that the same rule of law issue that I mentioned in connection with the firing of members of the Board of Issues is starting to grasp the Supreme Court on these kinds of questions. And the Labor Committee is not, I think, finding, or the board finding it as easy. And there's another point I want to make about both of these cases is you don't have to rely solely on judicial interpretation. Congress should go right back to the Federal Communities Act, the Advisory Committees Act, and amend that to prevent this from happening again. And they should do the same thing with the Labor Board to make it very, very clear that the ordinary rules for preliminary injunctions apply. you have essentially at this point a rogue president on a large number of issues, and you don't want to have the next guy doing it in the opposite direction. You want to basically make sure that the size of the administrative scape, the control of Congress where appropriate, are going to be exercised, and you don't want to be paying fast and loose. It's a horrible suggestion that somebody said, Mr. Trump, you should do exactly what Mr. Biden did. What we really want to do is have a situation where neither of them can do it. Otherwise, you're playing tit-for-tat justice down the world. And the threat to democracy from that kind of behavior, the threat to the rule of law, is enormously strong. And it has to be stopped. And it has to stop now.
About the NLRB, Richard, you have been unhappy with the NLRB through many administrations in our conversation, Mr. Bush's, Mr. Obama's, Mr. Trump's. So this is not a fresh concern. What is, restate your observation of the NLRB. Is it a useful tool or has it overstayed its welcome?
Well, it turns out there are two levels of objection. One is I've always been strongly opposed from the time, 40-odd years ago, to the creation of an independent agency that interferes with contractual arrangements, which are better done by not collective bargaining forced by the state, but by voluntary arrangements. And sometimes employers want unions to be formed, and they will form them and do negotiations with them. The level of growth is very much higher, and you don't get the kinds of terrible situations where an oppressive union contract leads to the essential destruction of a large firm, like what happened to General Motors in 1979. That's the mugger thing, but there's also a minor stuff. Like every statute, there are all sorts of conventions that are traditionally carried over from one generation of board leadership to another. And what Biden is determined to do is to basically back off and to get rid of every one of those particular conventions to the extent that he thinks it's going to help him. And so he doesn't do very fair when it comes to figuring out what's the bargaining unit, how you hold elections, how you count ballots, all that kind of stuff, which really matters. What happens is the proposition that this administration works on is that the national labor law is not giving you a framework to figure out whether workers fairly do or do not want a union. We're trying to maximize the likelihood of union selects of success in these things. And if it means we don't have elections and we have card checks or whatever it is that's going on there, he will do it. And that's the kind of objection which can get bipartisan support. You don't want to allow them to play fair. The larger issue, I think, is much more controversial. And I'm certainly not going to disappear and disagree with what I just said before. What I will do is to say, if you play the rules in accordance with the current game, unions cannot win because the cost of unions to union members in terms of dues, obligations, and most importantly, the likelihood of losing your job to a superior competitor is such that unless you have something very irregular, you're not going to win. And so you look at the automobile, the one case the union won, it's going to be challenged. And then the unions manage to lose the elections in places like Mercedes-Benz factories and so forth. Workers understand that senior workers will be very fine if they can keep their pensions and retire. But everybody else is going to be subject to the fact that the ranks are going to shrink and that they're going to lose jobs. And the fact that you make a 15% premium for 1 year doesn't compensate for the fact that you're going to lose everything. The only real way for workers to gain is through productivity, income increases, and productivity is not the name of a union. The name of a union is monopoly extraction, and I'm very, very opposed to that. And I think what happens is you not read the statute to give unions undue power when what you're trying to do is to create a basic parity between the employer and the employee, and so that these elections would be fair fights. Unions can't win fair fights, which is why they're opposed to them.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, when we come back, a noblest and a noblest. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Your you're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.